This is VOA News reporting by remote. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, pledged Wednesday to continue the Trump administration's aggressive trade war with China, saying she will work as aggressively as possible to protect American workers and businesses from unfair Chinese practices. Raimondo said tariffs imposed during the Donald Trump presidency and widely decried by Democrats at the time have in fact helped save American jobs in steel and aluminum industries. Overall, the United States is maintaining tariffs on 66% of Chinese exports. Raimondo said those import taxes are needed to level the playing field for international trade. A Pew Research Center survey taken last year found that nearly 9 of 10 adults in the U.S. consider China a competitor or enemy rather than a partner. Three Hong Kong pro-democracy activists, including well-known publisher Jimmy Lai, have pleaded guilty to taking part in an unauthorized rally in 2019 that led to violence between police and participants. Lai is already being held in custody on other charges related to his outspoken opposition to China's crackdown on civil liberties in the territory. The governments in Beijing and Hong Kong have been pursuing criminal cases against political opponents and civil rights activists in Hong Kong in a crackdown that followed the 2019 protests. And British authorities are recommending Wednesday that AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine not be given to adults under 30 where possible because of more evidence that the shot may be linked to rare blood clots. For more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. Via remote, this is VOA News. A Florida coroner says a man who died after receiving a COVID-19 vaccine died of natural cause. A South Florida medical examiner's office says a doctor who died about 2 weeks ago after he got Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine died in a manner that's being categorized as natural. The medical examiner said the 56-year-old doctor suffered from a condition that can prevent blood from clotting and cause internal bleeding. Chile approved on Wednesday the emergency use of the vaccine from the Chinese-Canadian consortium CanSino, restricting its distribution to people between 18 and 60 years of age. The director of the Chilean local drug regulatory, Heriberto Garcia, said the age restriction is due to a lack of studies of the use of this specific vaccine model in elderly people. President Sebastian Panera underlined the CanSino jab requires only one shot for immunization, helping in the outreach of the health campaign. President Joe Biden will unveil a series of executive actions at addressing gun violence on Thursday, according to a person familiar with the plans. Biden is also expected to nominate David Chipman, a former federal agent and advisor at the gun control group Giffords, to be director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives. If confirmed, Chipman would be the agency's first permanent director since 2015. Biden is expected to announce tighter regulations requiring buyers of homemade ghost guns to undergo background checks. A lawyer for imprisoned Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny says doctors have found he is suffering from two spinal hernias. Vadim Kobezv told the Interfax news agency that Navalny also has a spinal protrusion and is beginning to lose sensation in his hands. Navalny went on a hunger strike last week to protest what he called poor medical care in Russia. And Mexican President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador has defended a 2013 ruling that freed one of the drug lords most wanted by U.S. authorities, even though Mexico's Supreme Court later ruled it was a mistake. Rafael Caro Quintero walked free while serving a 40-year sentence for the torture murder of U.S. drug enforcement agent Enrique Kiki Camarino back in 1985. For more news, please join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown reporting by remote. VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Chadians protest to demand change as the country votes in presidential election this Sunday.
We think that it is good for our country to change the system of ruling the country. So I'm among those who don't accept the coming election to take place.
The U.S. counterterrorism exercise in West Africa focuses on the role of police and the courts. A Zimbabwe court jails an opposition activist for blowing a whistle during protest. A Kenyan activist is in custody for making posters to stop the IMF from making loans to Kenya. And Rwanda commemorates 27th anniversary of the 1994 genocide.
The report shows that President Mitterrand and his closest advisors knew that a genocide against the Tutsi was being planned by their allies in Rwanda.
And the trial of an alleged Sierra Leone war crimes perpetrator has ended in Liberia. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of Chad are voting this Sunday in presidential election where President Idriss Deby, in power for 31 years, is seeking another six-year term. All indications are that Deby will win re-election because critics say he has intimidated and jailed his main challengers. Early last month, main opposition candidate Saleh Kebzabo left the presidential contest after security forces killed two people while trying to arrest another opposition leader, Yaya Dillo. Clement Ibaifuta is the president of the Association of Victims of former President Issen Habre's crimes. He says Chadians have been protesting almost daily to demand change and that some have even refused to collect their voting cards.
The situation on the ground is very complicated because there is no democracy in our country. It is Idriss Deby, the president of Chad, is ruling the country 13 years by doing nothing for the country on the way of develop the country. So we think that it is good for our country to change the system of ruling the country. So I'm among those who don't accept the coming election to take place.
The opposition leader, Mr. Padaki,
he's not in the opposition.
So he says that if he wins the election, President Idriss Deby, he will assure that he will stay in the country. He will live in his country.
Really, he's a system fabrication. He's not in the opposition. Because now he's ruled the country with this system, he's just playing a game to say that he's a opposition. Really, he's not a opposition.
So how many opposition candidates are in this coming election?
All the real opposition take off because if you go to the election, Idriss Deby will win. All the people in Chad know that he will impose a result that we will not accept. So all the opposition notice that and they all take off. They refuse to go escorting this bad system.
There's a report that some of the people who are planning to run against President Deby have dropped out of the campaign. Why is that?
Because the system is not democratic. It is just an oppression. If, you know, in 13 years, he didn't do a development system, the education, the health, all things is not working.
You are there in N'Djamena. Suppose you ask people in Chad, do they think that President Deby should be re-elected?
They say that enough is enough. We want a changement. We want a transition. We want a new philosophy to rule the country because enough is enough. The time has come that Chadians expect a changement, a real changement.
Clement, thank you so much. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Clement Ibaifuta is the president of the Association of Victims of former President Issen Habre's crimes. He was speaking with us from the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. Zimbabwe's main opposition party says the government is again cracking down on critics with a prison sentence given to 28-year-old Malcolm Borero Haruzivishe. A court found him guilty of inciting violence, but rights groups say the real aim is to intimidate protesters demanding more financial support for the poor. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
I'm good. I'm strong.
That's Makombo Haruzivishe shouting at waiting reporters as he left for Chukurubi Maximum Prison, his new home, for the next 14 months after he was sentenced to prison on Tuesday. Authorities say the 28-year-old blew a whistle to alert opposition protesters to pounce on police during a protest in February last year. Kosa Mncube, Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, who represented Haruzivishe during his trial, says only circumstantial evidence was used to convict him of inciting violence and resisting arrest.
We do not agree with the decision of the court because we believe the facts upon which the court relied to arrive at the decision to convict could not support that decision. And therefore, it was a serious misdirection on the part of the court to convict him of those offences. And we are definitely taking it up on appeal because the decision of the court cannot be sustained legally.
His arrest after months on the run follows an accusation that he incited violence in a protest demanding the government provide more support to poor Zimbabweans. Tendai Biti, vice president of the main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, reacted to Haruzivishe's conviction in an interview with VOA.
This is a sad day for Zimbabwe. It reflects the selective application of the law in Zimbabwe. It confirms the complete emasculation of state institutions for Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe's government says the conviction of Haruzivishe, who has taken part in many anti-government protests, was legitimate and legal. He only shook his head after Magistrate Judith Taruvinga read her ruling. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Kenyan activist Mutemi Kiama is awaiting bail ruling today, Thursday, after spending a night in police custody. He is accused of making posters bearing images of President Uhuru Kenyatta and his deputy William Ruto, warning the International Monetary Fund against making a loan amounting to almost $2.6 billion to Kenya. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA.
Kenyans stormed the International Monetary Fund IMF social media accounts, warning them not to grant Kenya at least $2.5 billion that the government of Kenya had asked to cushion Kenyans from the COVID-19 pandemic that has seen some parts of the country go into partial lockdown. What began as a citizen concern has led to human rights activist Mutemi Kiama into police custody. According to the police officer investigating the matter, Kiama is being probed on computer misuse and cybercrime. While in court, Kiama said it's true he made the poster and shared it on his social media accounts.
We shall sell their lands to pay these debts. Kenyans should organize themselves. Enough is enough. I post something on social media. They send the police to arrest me. We have the freedom of speech. It's true. I did post that comment and the account is mine.
Kiama, who is being represented in court by senior counsel Martha Karua and Haron Dubi, is expected in court today, Thursday, for the ruling. Efforts by senior counsel Martha Karua to have their client granted bail yesterday, Wednesday, were futile. Martha says everyone has a right to comment on government affairs.
People can comment on what the government is doing and freely give their opinion. And I've seen a lot of people commenting on the issue of the loans from IMF. I think it's freedom of speech versus those who want a pushback on those freedoms.
The state prosecutor Irungu Gitonga yesterday, Wednesday, urged the court to detain activist Mutemi Kiama in custody for 14 days, claiming that if the orders sought are not granted, the respondent is likely to interfere with investigations and potential witnesses, an application Kiama's lawyers refused. As Kiama faces the charges, IMF has already approved the loan for Kenya to be paid in 38 months. Economist Ali Khan Sacho said that Kenyans' concern on social media may not make so much impact, since IMF believes the government transacts on behalf of citizens.
In my experience, the IMF pays little regard to public opinion. It looks at its relationship with the governments that it deals with. Therefore, the direct appeal to the IMF is interesting, it's unique. It should percolate to the highest corner office at the IMF, and it expresses an increasingly interesting issue that citizens are unhappy with some of the borrowing.
The International Monetary Fund has this week issued a statement addressing Kenyan citizens' online concerns, saying the country requires the loan at the moment in order to survive and that Kenya can still borrow up to a limit of $5 billion. Kenya's total public debt currently stands at $72.5 billion, as most Kenyans believe the money borrowed does not benefit them in any way due to corruption. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 8. The first ever West Africa Joint Operations Regional Exercise went for the heart of extremism in Africa, focusing on the nations of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, but tackling the threat not through the military, but through the law enforcement and the justice systems. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
About 80 law enforcement and judiciary officers participated in last week's inaugural program. A small figure compared to the thousands of personnel who usually take part in military-led counterterrorism exercises. But this modest exercise, which recently concluded, could have a big impact against terrorism, said Julie Cabus, Deputy Assistant Secretary and Assistant Director of the Training Directorate in the State Department's Bureau of Diplomatic Security.
For this exercise, we focused on gathering timely, accurate evidence while working with judicial authorities to ensure adherence to local laws. Goals of the exercise included enhancing the investigative capacity and capability of units focused on terrorism cases in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, ensuring investigations adhere to the rule of law and the principles of human rights, and facilitating regional cross-border cooperation by sharing best practices.
Her U.S. federal agency is responsible for securing diplomacy and protecting the integrity of U.S. travel documents. Because of its global mandate, the service has the largest geographic reach of any U.S. federal law enforcement agency, with more than 270 offices outside the U.S. Michael Gonzalez, Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Bureau of African Affairs, says the small targeted efforts form an important part of the State Department's counterterrorism strategy in West Africa's Sahel region, which include the countries that participated in the exercise, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. All three of those nations have seen a rise in terrorist activity in recent years. Gonzalez.
Ultimately, addressing the challenges in Sahel will require security interventions. But ultimately, the answer to the challenges of the Sahel lies in addressing the crisis of state legitimacy and delivering governance and services to marginalized communities. And so this West Africa Joint Operation exercise that we saw last month is a really good example of the U.S. partnering with our partner countries in the region to develop their capacity so that they can gain greater confidence of their public by effectively delivering accountability and follow-up to the security threats that are posed to communities.
Cabus added that her bureau has been asked to look at running a similar exercise in southern Africa, in the coastal nation of Mozambique, where violent extremists linked to Islamic State have recently stepped up their deadly attacks. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Rwandan government says France knew about the planning of the Rwandan genocide against the Tutsis, but did nothing to stop it due to France's geopolitical gains. In a speech commemorating the 27th anniversary of the Rwanda genocide, President Paul Kagame said lies of critics in the diaspora will not change the facts about the genocide and Rwanda's development. Eugene Uwimana has details from Kigali.
That's Rwandan President Paul Kagame. He says while the Rwandan government tries to rebuild the country in unity and reconciliation, genocide deniers who have found safe havens abroad are telling more lies just to tarnish the country's image and mislead facts about the genocide.
Disgraced former officials, motivated by petty resentments, have spent years cultivating influential foreign gatekeepers with a flimsy campaign of lies.
President Kagame says even when genocide suspects are being tried, the highest medal in Rwanda's judicial system in the shadow of claiming what they call human rights, yet they refused to bring them to book themselves.
There are a couple of cases where we told their hosts, the hosts of these criminals, that those are actual criminals. They have either killed our people, they have stolen, they have raped, they've done all kinds of things. And we have asked them to try them. And no, they say, no, these are critics of leaders of Rwanda. These are people who are fighting for freedom, for rights of all kinds.
While addressing 500 people who physically attended Wednesday commemoration in the Kigali Arena, President Kagame welcomed the Duclert report by a commission of historians, which was commissioned by the French government. He said France knew that genocide was being planned.
The report shows that President Mitterrand and his closest advisors knew that a genocide against the Tutsi was being planned by their allies in Rwanda. Despite that knowledge, the president decided to continue supporting them because he believed this was necessary for France's geopolitical position.
President lit a flame of remembrance at the genocide memorial in Kigali. It will burn for 100 days to symbolize the number of days that the genocide lasted. This year's theme is Remember, Unite, and Renew.
As Rwanda this week begins commemorating the 27th anniversary of the 1994 Rwanda genocide, the executive director of the African Great Lakes Action Network and a Rwanda genocide survivor says he is appalled by what he calls a steady increase in the level of atrocities and disregard for human life exhibited by President Paul Kagame's government. An estimated 800,000 people were killed during the genocide. President Kagame, speaking Wednesday, described criticism of his government as campaigns built on lies driven by disgraced former government officials motivated by petty resentment. Claude Gatebuke is executive director of the African Great Lakes Action Network. He says one of the many critics of the Rwandan government arrestor is Paul Rusesabagina, and that the group is calling for his unconditional release.
There is a number of issues that actually we highlighted in our statement. There is extrajudicial killings. There is kidnapping. For example, we're talking about the genocide and commemorating the genocide, but one of the people who saved over 1,200 people, Mr. Paul Rusesabagina, who is the real-life hero of the film Hotel Rwanda, was in late August of 2020 kidnapped from Dubai, taken to Rwanda, and is facing charges because he's criticized the government of Rwanda. Journalists have been arrested and are spending a lot of time in pretrial detention with no real charges. The disappearances of people like Bahati Musa, there is the kidnapping, a lot of things happening in Rwanda, the country led by Paul Kagame, where so many human rights are being abused. And the reason we released the statement is to shine a light and make sure that the world knows what is happening, but also toward various authorities in various institutions around the world, U.S. government, among others, the U.N., the African Union, and many other international organizations that need to take action in response to these human rights abuses by Paul Kagame and his government in Rwanda.
You mentioned Rusesabagina. As you know, the Rwandan government says that Rusesabagina and others, they are on trial because of what the government called involvement in some terroristic act.
Yeah, my comment is that is a kind of a catch-all type of crime or charge that the Rwandan government uses basically toward every one of its well-known critics. Let me just remind the world that even Nelson Mandela was accused of being a terrorist. He was in the U.S. terrorist until, I believe it was 2009, if I'm not mistaken. So the government of Rwanda has used this charge on multiple people. And so Basically, Paul Rusesabagina's crime was really to criticize Paul Kagame's government.
I'm sure you are aware that President Paul Kagame, I think he spoke on Wednesday, referring to organizations like yours of peddling falsehoods about Rwanda. Your comment?
Obviously, when he says it's falsehoods, you know, everything that I've stated here can be proven with facts. And the biggest highlight that I can give you is, for a long time, the Rwandan government claimed that they did not have troops in the Congo. Then they turned around and held a ceremony to celebrate troops returning from the Congo. So he's projecting, Paul Kagame is projecting and says that we are peddling lies, but every case that was highlighted, for example, in that letter is very factual. That's why he's responding to it. If it was actually false, he wouldn't respond.
It's so nice to talk with you, and thank you very much again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, James.
That was Claude Gatebuke, Executive Director of the African Great Lakes Action Network. He was speaking with us from Nashville, Tennessee, USA. The trial of an alleged Sierra Leone war crimes perpetrator has ended in Liberia. Jibril Masekwai was a senior commander of the Sierra Leone Revolutionary United Front, RUF rebels, that fought in Liberia alongside Charles Taylor's rebels from 1999 to 2003. He is charged with murder of civilians, aggravated war crimes, and crimes against humanity. His trial began in Finland and brought to Liberia to hear from witnesses. As Mose Gazier would report from Monrovia, the next phase of the trial is Freetown, Sierra Leone.
This is the first time that someone directly associated with the Liberian civil crisis has been put on trial on Liberian soil. 56 witnesses testified in court during the nearly 2 months trial. The 51-year-old Masekwai was not in court to face his accusers, but judges allowed him to watch the testimonies from prison in Finland. The witnesses included civilians, former combatants, and journalists, among others. Most witnesses accused Masekwai of setting a town ablaze in Lofa County, burning alive all the citizens, while others alleged he was involved in beheading, torturing, and butchering of pregnant women. Finland's National Bureau of Investigation says it took about 2 years to gather evidence and witnesses to indict Jibril Masekwai. Thomas Evgren is the NBI chief investigator for the Masekwai war crimes trial. Evgren said Finland is prosecuting Masekwai because it wants to send a message to the world against people who commit international crimes.
This case, of course, symbolizes the importance to bring up whenever it's possible fact that when we talk about serious core international crimes, there shouldn't be any country in the world who is hosting suspected criminals. So from this perspective, it's important for us in Finland to be part of the international community where we can give out a clear statement that we do investigate and we do prosecute.
The Human Rights Group Global Justice and Research Project was the institution that raised the issue of Jibril Masekwai to the international community. Hassan Bilite, head of Global Justice and Research Project, said the trial will awaken the hunger for the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia.
I believe that this is a very great development for Liberia. It will awaken the minds of the Liberian poor respect to calling on their respective representatives to create a war crimes court for accountability.
Bilite said prosecuting of people who committed war crimes during the civil war will serve as a deterrent to others who may want to bring trouble in the country.
It serves as a deterrent tomorrow, so a group of people who may want political power will not just pick up weapons, jump into the bushes and begin shooting at people because they want to be president or whatever. So that deterrent, it's very important because in the past, over 250,000 Liberians lost their lives.
With the conclusion of the Jibril Masekwai trial in Liberia, the Finnish District Court will move to Freetown, Sierra Leone, to also hear from additional witnesses. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
And that's it for this Thursday, April 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good day.